Sunrise. "You don't like the palace," said Leo. Savine didn't seem to like anything lately, and her husband least of all. "I find it hard to sleep here," she said, with a sullen glance at one of the Anglanders who were guarding every landing and doorway. He wanted to say she was lucky to be alive, but was trying hard to be sympathetic. He'd won, after all. He could afford to be. "After what you've been through, it's a wonder you can sleep at all." "The place is a ruin," said Savine, sweeping past a mural of some grand coronation with all the faces chiselled out. "It still smells." She watched a man in blazing sun livery teetering on a stepladder so he could scrub at slogans up near the ceiling. "There is evidence of the burner's tenancy everywhere, of judge's tenancy." She gave an ugly shiver of disgust and held baby Ardy closer. "It feels like a prison." Leo clenched his jaw. How grateful most people would have been to be kept in a cage like this one. "The children are safest here in the Agrient." He winced as he shifted Harrod's weight in the crook of his arm. "We're already patching up the walls. A king belongs in a palace, and Harrod will be king now."
"Harrod is a baby.
That's why he'll need guidance." Savine looked sideways at him, and hardly with the proper affection a wife should have for her husband.
"From you, I suppose?"
"From both of us." But it was only right that a father should have the final word when it came to his son. By the dead, his stump was throbbing, his bad arm tingling, his shoulder aching from the effort of holding the child as he lurched along. "We're together in this."
"Are we?" "When we discussed bringing back the monarchy, we never mentioned changing the monarch."
"Plans have to bend with circumstance," grunted Leo, the sort of thing he'd always hated hearing his mother tell him. "I would have warned you if I could, of course I would. But how could I? I was scrambling to save your life, to save the bloody Union."
He had to stop. He'd wanted to sweep into the Hall of Mirrors carrying his son, to be seen as a father, head of the ideal family, the shining example to be copied across the reborn nation. But dropping the tiny king on his head, then tripping over him, would have won him few admirers. To be a cripple well, you have to accept what you can't do.
"Durant," he forced through gritted teeth, "could you help?"
And he dumped the future monarch into his arms and turned away, leaving him blinking with elbows everywhere. No doubt he was handsome and clever and loyal as they come, but he made a poor nursemaid. Still, the only alternative was Zuri, and Leo trusted her less than ever these days, even though Savine loved her so much. Because Savine loved her so much, maybe. It was a bad message to send, having brown faces around the royal children. Savine frowned towards the tall windows as she walked, rocking Ardy gently, criss-cross shadows of the lead between the panes sliding across her face. A careful powdering couldn't hide the fading bruises from her struggle at the top of the Tower of Chains. Or perhaps, far more likely now he thought about it, she'd chosen to leave them on display for a hint of the noble martyr. Nothing in Savine's appearance ever happened by accident, after all. Servants were busy in the unkempt gardens outside, clipping Sons of the Union back into the bushes, weeding it back into the flower beds, chiselling it back into the scarred stonework. They must have ripped off those royal liveries when the great change made them fatal. Now they rush to wriggle back into them. People adjust. They adjust more quickly and more completely than you'd ever imagine. Leo winced as he hurried to catch up.
"What can I do," he asked, "to make things easier? I want no more executions."
An uncomfortable pause. Durand gave Leo one of those oh-so-expressive glances from under his brows. Leo took his meaning at once, as always, and agreed at once, as always, there would need to be at least one more. King Orso was a problem with only one solution.
"I understand your feelings," he murmured.
as if fucking feelings should set policy. I understand, but no more, Leo. Savine, the guilty have to be punished. Quietly, privately, yes, but we have to be made safe. We have to be better than judge. Otherwise, what is the point? The point is that we win. That was so obvious, he was amazed he had to explain it. And to her, of all people, who had been happy to trample over her own father, mother, and brother if she could use them as a ladder to her own ambitions. And some people will always be a threat. Orso's girl Hildy is too naive, and Bremerdan Gorst is too stubborn, and I wouldn't trust that bastard Tunny to carry my chamber pot. Honestly, I'm a long way from trusting Teufel. The woman's proved herself quite the plotter. I worry she's not loyal. You worry she's too loyal, you mean, but not to you. What's the difference? She has proved herself effective. My father is gone, and Pike was never apprehended. We must have someone competent in charge of the Inquisition. There are hundreds of breakers and burners still at large, thousands maybe. We have to root them out. Her grey's cheek tightened as she clenched her jaw. We have to make sure nothing like the Great Change can ever happen again. It didn't turn out too badly. He caught her staring at him, shocked. All right, if it makes you happy, I'll give Teufel a chance to prove herself. It will make me less unhappy, at least. Anything for you, my love, he said sulkily. Don't you trust me? It can be hard to trust men who stab their allies in the back. I don't plan to do it once a week, he snapped, or ever again, he added hurriedly. He felt bad for Lord Marshal Forrest, a good man, a good soldier. He felt bad, but there'd been no choice, and as a point of fact, he'd stabbed him in the front. At Stauffenbeck, I bloody dithered, and we bloody lost, and I swore I'd never let a moment slip past again. So I saw an opportunity, and I grabbed it. For us, I thought you'd be pleased. The truth was, she'd changed, and not for the better. He'd said his vows to someone who let no scruple get in her way. But then she'd said hers to a man who could fasten his own belt without help. That's marriage. People change, and not always in the way you want, and you're chained together anyway. Leo took a breath as they reached the great doors, fabulously carved with food and drink and celebration, only slightly spoiled by a burned patch and a few axe marks. We have to be united, he said, wondering who he was trying to convince. For the sake of the children, for the sake of the nation. Our marriage made sense. It still makes sense. It makes more sense than ever. Applause rang out as Savine swept into the Hall of Mirrors wearing a radiant smile.
Lord and Lady Brock, bellowed Glarwood, smashing his big hands together.
There were perhaps 200 representatives gathered there, standing up to clap from a mismatched array of seating scavenged from across the Agriant. Battered armchairs, spilling stuffing, royal dining chairs and children's schooling chairs, even a milking stool, and one great curved bench, somehow salvaged from the ruins of the Lord's Round, scorched at one end. Savine had not set foot in that building during Rizenau's reign, but even she could tell the balance of the representatives had greatly changed since then. Less than half this crowd had been voted for, and those were mostly from the richer towns and districts, landowners, merchants, men of business. The rest had all once been nobles, members of the Open Council lucky and unprincipled enough to slip from one body to another. Now Leo had made them nobles again. There were even a few women, taking the places of fathers, brothers, husbands who had met their ends in the Great Change. On the front row, Lords Isher and Huygen gave their own continuing survival a standing ovation, heavy with the furs and chains of aristocracy they had so eagerly cast off. Thousands of reflections applauded too, of course. In places,
a broken mirror split a face into mismatched halves, or a shattered one smashed the world into a thousand distorted fragments. Smears of paint still clung in the corners where the slogans had been hastily scrubbed away. But then the Hall of Mirrors was a vast room. Putting it right would be the work of weeks, the palace, years, the Agrient, decades, the city of Adua, the Union as a whole. Could any of it really go back together? Savine remembered Judge falling, that flash of her sneer as she dropped away. She shed no tears for the evil bitch. The fates knew no one had ever deserved the long drop more. And yet she could not stop thinking of it. The hand at her throat, the parapet grinding into her back, the hollows sucking in her stomach as she tumbled over. She clenched her fist as she sat facing those ranks of false smiles, nails cutting sharp into her palm. She told herself she was safe. The representatives might well have been outnumbered by Leo's heavily armed Anglanders standing watchful at every door and window. She could not have been safer. She had to focus on what could be changed, and change it for the better. She glanced down at her infant daughter, nudged the blanket from her sleeping face. She had to turn her back on the past and focus on the future.
"Are you all right?"
Zuri murmured in her ear. Savine forced out a smile.
"I should be asking you that."
Zuri looked as composed as ever. She had not breathed a word of whatever tortures she had endured beneath the House of Questions, and Savine had not the courage to ask. That way she could almost pretend it had never happened, except there were some strange marks on the backs of Zuri's hands now, pinpricks, dimples, not exactly scars, but not quite normal either. Zuri saw her looking and worked the sleeves of her dress down over them.
"My friends," called Leo as the clapping faded. "My peers, noblemen and commoners, representatives of the people of the Union, the great change is behind us."
The applause at that was even louder. Few indeed mourned its passing, and Leo had made sure any that did occupied cells in the House of Questions rather than seats in this chamber.
"Thanks to the courage of my wife, Lady Brock," he was interrupted by cheers, mostly from the commoners' side of the room. "The darling of the slums," someone shouted. "The mother of the nation," roared another, smashing his hands together.
Savine had to force out another smile, kindly meant, she was sure, but their clamour reminded her too much of the crowd at her trial, of the mobs on the day of the great change. She was safe, all those guards, but it was as if her body had not quite realised it. Sweat prickled under her clothes. Leo, looking slightly put out at the admiration for his wife, held up his hand for silence.
"Thanks to Lady Brock, Judge has been thrown down. The burners and the breakers are routed, their ringleaders dead, captured, or even now being hunted down. They'll find there's nowhere to hide. They won't scrub the blood of innocence from their clawing hands. Justice will find them out, whatever hole they wriggle into."
More applause. Savine had to admit she was impressed. She had always been more comfortable with small rooms, intimate groups, hushed whispers. But Leo knew how to fill a hall.
"He speaks well," she murmured. "Vanity, a loud voice, and a loose relationship with the truth," whispered Zuri. "All the qualities of a successful politician."
Leo smiled, relishing his moment of victory, and 100 reflections in the great mirrors smiled back at him. Was there something horrible in that, given the price? 100 reflections of Savine looked on in adoring triumph, but she could see the pale worry hidden in those copies of her own bruised face. She was not sure she had ever really loved him, but there had been plenty to admire once. He had been generous, honest, and brave. She had wanted him to be more ruthless, more ambitious, more calculating. She had moulded him into her image. Now she found she had much preferred him before.
"We must bring back the best of the past," he was calling. "Families once honoured by a Dan in their name will be honoured again. Our restored open council will be made up of commoners and noblemen in equal numbers, united in their purpose, with respect given by every member to every member. A grand declaration has been prepared to that effect. I trust everyone here will sign their names to it and join us in this brave new dawn, this new sunrise."
Zuri laid the great book open on the table and turned it around to face the representatives. Neat blocks of her perfect calligraphy on one side, spaces for 200 signatures on the other. Savine had brought her lawyer Temple over from the near country to help draw it up, the keenest eye she knew for both the art and science of a contract. Leo might like to harp on the past, but this paved the way for a new government, a new monarch, a new union. Isher sprang up from his chair.
"I will be honoured to be the first to sign,"
though no one had asked him to be.
"And I the second," shouted Huygen, not to be outdone.
"We must institute a new government, one based on justice and fairness. We must return to our principles," said Leo sternly. "And as the first step, we must elect a new king."
The lords, clearly prepared for this development, applauded again, but Savine saw worried faces on the other side of the room. The burners might have humiliated the king after all, but even they had not presumed to replace him. An old man with wispy hair was finally urged to his feet, clasping his hands, more like a supplicant approaching the throne than a proud representative of the people.
"My Lord Brock, if I may, no one here, I am sure, doubts your motives."
He glanced nervously towards Leo's many loyal soldiers.
"Or dreams of denying your contribution, or disagrees with a word of your admirable speech."
"I sense a but coming," said Isher, one white eyebrow raised.
"But when it comes to electing a new king, do we not still have, well, an old one to worry about?"
The silence was total. Then Leo shrugged.
"I've always been more of a doer than a worrier."
Mocking laughter from the noblemen's benches.
"But Lord Brock also is the anointed High King of the Union. He wore the crown. He cannot be simply dismissed."
"Oh, I find he can," said Leo. "Like that."
He snapped his fingers with an echoing crack. "He's put right out of my mind." Some of the lords crowed. Others mockingly snapped their fingers in the old man's face. Others sneered their contempt for the entire commoners' side of the chamber, their scorn reflected in the mirrors over and over into the far distance. Unity and respect, it seemed, were only for those who did as they were told. For once, everything was going just the way Leo hoped.
"I'd like a show of hands," he told the Hall of Mirrors. "Nothing hidden, nothing suspect. Each man makes his loyalty clear. Now, an open vote for our new king."
A vote observed by him, who had all the armed men in the city, not to mention at least 100 in this room, firmly under his command. Only a fool calls for a vote when he hasn't made sure of the outcome, after all. Isher stood precisely on cue.
"I propose that the new monarch picks up the bloodline of the old. I propose that our new king should be the natural grandson of our much-missed King Giselle,"
a man he'd showered with scorn when it suited him.
"I propose, as our next ruler, the infant Harod Dan Brock."
Leo watched the representatives, reading their expressions, guessing their intentions. Many weren't happy, but none had the stomach for a fight. They'd have voted for a cart of dung if it meant things went back to some kind of normal, and business could be done, and jokes made, and strolls taken in the sun, without the nagging fear of the long drop from the Tower of Chains. Leo gave Glarwood the nod.
Are those representatives who wish to vote for the infant Harrod Danbrock as the next High King of the Union? He roared. Raise your hands!
On the nobleman's side of the hall, arms shot up so fast it was a wonder they didn't fly off. On the commoner's side, they were slower, but they soon saw which way the wind was blowing. With varying expressions of worry, dismay, and disgust, they raised their hands. Only a few stubborn holdouts sat glaring at the prospective monarch, arms folded, and Leo took careful note of their names. They could be tastefully weeded out later. He didn't look much like a king, as Leo glanced around. He looked like a white bundle in the arms of his mother, who, with her unerring instinct for the centre of attention, appeared to have swapped babies while the voting was underway. But King Harrod II was raised to the throne, as his grandfather, King Jezal I, had been, by near unanimous accord. The ringing applause jerked the infant monarch from his sleep and caused him to start bleating. But he'd done his work for today. Savine caught Zuri's eye and nodded towards the door, and the cries of the latest High King of the Union faded from the room. Huygen was already on his feet.
His Majesty is quite clearly too young to govern in his own right.
He pointed at Leo, as though the idea had just occurred.
I propose that his father, Lord Leonault Danbrock, and his mother, Lady Savine Danbrock, govern in his stead as Lord and Lady Regent.
I second that,
shouted Isher, popping up from his seat again like a toy on a spring.
I third it.
The nobles rose as one. The commoners were less happy than ever, but Durand gave a subtle signal, and the guards began thumping the butts of well-sharpened polearms on the tiles to send up a menacing rattle, and it quickly spurred the loiterers to their feet. Judge had taught them well. Nobody wanted to be the last one sitting. They'd let the sluice open a crack, and the flood had forced it wide. Now there was no closing it, and they all were swept away into the future. Leo gritted his teeth, rocked his weight forwards, and stood. Ignoring the pain was easy. He'd been through the fire, but seeing his reflection in the many mirrors, it wasn't flattery to say he was still a fine-looking figure.
My thanks. I humbly accept this great honour, this great responsibility. I'm a soldier first, but now is the time for healing wounds, for reforging what's been broken stronger than ever, for making us a union again.
He thumped his fist on the table.
We'll have a new age, my friends. Not the corruption of the old regime, not the folly of the breakers or the madness of the burners. The best of both worlds, justice and good government for all.
Now there was wholehearted support. The representatives were already rushing forwards, queuing up to sign. Noblemen first, as was only right, Isher smiling at their head. The sun rose on a new age, one that Leo would shape as he saw fit. Savine might not like how he'd done it, but it was done, and all their ambitions realized. How could she not be pleased? How could she not be grateful? Leo lurched around on his false leg to grin at her. But she was sitting up tall to look towards the grand declaration, watching intently as the first signatures were scratched beside it.